We're back in Parsha Korach, and Monday's shir and today's shir were two halves of one shir, and so let's try to bring them together. So just to quickly review what we talked about last time, we started off by reading through the beginning of the Parsha, by Yikach Korach, ben Yitzhar, ben Kahat, ben Levi, v'ratan v'aviram, b'nei Eliyah, v'on ben Pelet, ben Reuven, that Korach took something. It's not clear exactly what he took, and the Mefarshim tried to explain it, but Korach went and gathered these people, and they came and they attacked Moshe Rabbeinu. V'yikalua Moshe v'al Aron, v'yamru aleihem, they said to Moshe and Aron, Rav lachem, it's too much for you. Ki kol ha'edah kula kedoshim, because the whole Eidah is kadosh, the whole Eidah is holy. Uvtacham Hashem, umadua titesu ha'kal Hashem, and why have you raised yourself up above Kal Hashem? And we talked about the fact that there seem to be two different things happening here. On the one hand, it seems to be that Korach is making a claim that we're all equal, so why are there leaders? And yet we know underneath the surface that he himself wants to be a leader. So what is the nature of the argument? Is he saying that there shouldn't be any leaders and we're all kadosh, or is he saying that he wants to be the leader? And we noted that his claim, his machloket here, is somehow muddled, and we have to see why that's muddled. We noted the fact that we have to come back to the response to Korach, that in the response, midah keneged midah, it should help us understand the issue with Korach himself. And the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu says that if the earth, if there's this whole new creation and the earth opens up and swallows them whole into the pit, then we'll know that Korach and his Eidah were wrong. And in what way is that a response to Korach's argument? Why is that midah keneged midah? Why is that the punishment that he receives? And so we zoomed out to talk about machloket in general. We looked at the Mishnah, which talks about machloket that's l'shem shemayim and a machloket shelo l'shem shemayim. That a machloket that's l'shem shemayim, that is l'shem shemayim, sofal yitkayim. A machloket l'shem shemayim, the end, it will stand, it will have kiyum. As opposed to machloket shelo l'shem shemayim, if a machloket's not l'shem shemayim, it will not have kiyum. And that the paradigm of l'shem shemayim is Hillel and Shammai. And the paradigm of that which is not l'shem shemayim, Korach v'adato, we noted a lack of parallel there as well. Hillel and Shammai on one side, and Korach and on the other side. Why is it just Korach standing there alone with his people? Where's Moshe Rabbeinu in that Mishnah? That somehow there seems to be something just inherent in Korach that's shelo l'shem shemayim. Going back to the earliest roots of Machloket, we looked at where Machloket first appears according to Chazal in the Torah, which is on the second day of creation. The two is inherently about creating Machloket. One is thesis, one exists. One is Yom Echad, not Yom Rishon, it's Yom Echad, it's one. But then when you have two retroactively, then you have one and another, you have thesis and antithesis, two coming at each other, and because of that you have a reality of a lack of tov. There's no ki tov on day two, because you have Machloket. And only then, when we get to day three, and we show that that division between the two is able to reconcile and create synthesis and produce new life, draw from a higher source and produce new life, then we have pa'amayim kitov on Yom Shlishi. We have it as kitov twice on Yom Shlishi, once for itself, and as the Medrash pointed out, once retroactively on Yom Sheni. Meaning once the machloket shows that the machloket was l'shem shamayim, the machloket was from the purpose of having two opposite perspectives, to, through that argument, bring down a higher truth, a greater truth, drawing from beyond in order to synthesize and produce new life, then retroactively a kitov can be chal on that machloket. We noted that also by Adam and Chava, that it says lo tov Adam lo tlevdo, it's not good for him to be by himself. What's good for him is to have him and his wife, thesis, antithesis, two opposites, a man and a woman, to come together. And we explored the Rashi there on the words Eselo Ezer Kenegdo, that potentially that Rashi which talks about that if Zacha Ezer Lo Zacha Kenegdo Lihilachem, that if perhaps Zacha here means to purify, if there's a purification of intent, then it'll be an Ezer, and if there isn't a purification of intent, then it's inevitably going to turn to war, because if two people are only fighting for their own perspectives, it will produce war. But if two people, a man and a woman who are opposite, come together from a pure place, each one simply funneling their own perspective but working to synthesize together, they will literally produce new life in the world. A husband and a wife produce a child, they bring literal new life into the world, and also spiritually, emotionally, on all levels of being, they're producing new life in this world. If they're coming together to synthesize, they're not coming together to simply fight and war for their own perspective. In terms of Hillel and Shammai, we looked at the Gemara about Hillel and Shammai. One of the Gemaras about Hillel and Shammai, which talked about how 3 years, and we noted the number three, 3 years later, when they had this argument of one said one was right, one said the other was right, and we talked about the fact that Yatsa bat kol ve'amra elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim, that the bat kol came out and said both are divrei Elokim chayim v'alacha kibeit Hillel, that you can have a reality where yes, at the end of the day, psak, you need to know in this world what to do, but Eilu ve'eilu divrei Elokim chayim means that if you have a machloket l'shem shamayim, so fal hikayim. If the goal of the machloket is that it's l'shem shamayim, if both are simply drawing their own unique perspective of truth into this world, and together they're using that to each reflect their own perspective, but to work toward a singular ultimate truth that comes from a synthesis of those two perspectives. So Fali Chaim, both are Divrei Elokim Chaim. Both have Chaim, both have life, both are eternal. And whether it's a simpler understanding like we pass like Beit Hillel in this world, we pass like Beit Shammai in the next world, or taking a more nuanced approach and saying no, Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai are both reflecting an aspect of truth. In Psach, we have to choose one way to act in this finite, limited world. But despite that, both have elements of truth within them. Both are part of Divrei Elokim Chaim. That's a machloket l'shem shamayim, and that's why sofal l'itkayim. That's why sofal l'itkayim. Is that inevitably that will be allowed to come about. Because they're drawing from a place of emes, from a place of truth, that a machloket. We talked about chavruto. How a chavruta, each chavruta should have a different opinion, and they should argue. But when they're arguing, they should be arguing in the pursuit of truth, to come to a place where they synthesize their perspectives in order to give birth to new Torah through the arguments that they have, through the machloket that they have. It's an amazing thing. I didn't tell the story last time, but there's a in my yeshiva, there are two rebbeim who have been there for a very long time, and they have a chavruta every day. And not this past summer, but two summers ago, I was zocheh to go back and spend the summer learning in my yeshiva in the Beis Medrash. Summer was nice, it's quiet, there aren't a lot of people there, Shana Alefskan, Shana Betskan, it's just the Israeli Kollel and the Rebbeim, some of the Rebbeim are learning there. And every morning you would wait for it. Every morning you would wait for it, right? They would be sitting there, and at some point, they'd start yelling. Start yelling. Hardcore Israeli Sephardim. Intense yelling, right? Madomer, were you saying this? And they're not go at each other. And if it was a really, really big machloket, they would get up and they'd throw each other into the wall. Watch it happen. You had to stop and just watch and not watch because, like, spectacle. You watch me like, these are people who are fighting for Torah. Fighting for Torah. And they're best friends and they love each other. They're fighting for Torah. Somebody even told me that that they were by one of their daughter's weddings that year, and they were under the chuppah, and there was, you know, different issues regarding how people understand whether or not you have to, you know, finish everything before shkia. And of course, every wedding, no matter what time of year it is, always manages to be at shkia, no matter how hard you try. So one of their daughter's weddings was around shkia, and so one of these two rabbeim said, you know, you can see, they're reading the ketubah. He said, just speed it up, just like skip a few parts. Let's get moving. And his chavruta said to him under the chuppah, because he was one of the Aden, because they're best friends. He said, Lama baya. And so my friend told me, who was there, who was sitting in the front row, he said that the other one looked back at him and says, you also have to fight with me over here? This is my daughter's wedding. Let me decide what goes on over here, you know? But like, that's who they were. But they're always talking Torah. They're always arguing Torah. But they're always arguing to find truth. To me, they are the epitome of machloket l'shem shamayim, because it's a machloket. It's like, it's all out war. But out of love and out of truth and a desire to find emes.
Isn't that bad?
It's great.
They have great intentions, but...
It's never at each other. And when they're wrong, they concede one to the other. And I've watched them concede.
But isn't it bad? Like, let's say someone coming in and just seeing this, it's like... They have a bad way of looking at it.
No, it's hard to... It takes time to get used to watching that. And like the first day of yeshiva, people are very confused when that happens, when they're coming out of high school. You know, there's a different story about one of the secretaries in YU. So she was new and she made an appointment for this particular Rosh Yeshiva. He's also an administrator. The appointment was made and the person came in and they were screaming at each other the whole time. They got into this huge fight. And he left at the end. He walked out of the office. And then the next day, he had another appointment for the same time. He comes back in, and they went at it again. And day in and day out, this was going on. And she started to get frightened every time he would come into the room. So finally, he went in, and she said, do you want me to stop letting him make these appointments? Because you guys he seems to come and yell at you every time. And she goes, no, he's my chavruta, it's okay. You know, it's like, from the outside perspective, that's what it looks like. And, you know, it's just to understand, like, what the context is and see it in action and understand what it means. Again, to have a machloket l'shem shamayim. And when you're in those, if you have those, if you've had the... It, and again, to me, I'm saying this is the ideal, and we talked about that last time. Just like everybody's face is different, so too is their mind different. We quoted that Chazal, it's in your source sheets, that their deotain showed, kach partzufehem shonot, that each person is meant to have a different perspective, and that the goal is to take those different perspectives and to synthesize them. That's actually the goal, that's the intent, that's the hope that we're striving for. And then we said last time that a chavruta, where you and your chavruta always only agree, I would claim it's very possible that you and your chavruta actually have no communication skills whatsoever. Because you don't realize that you have different perspective, which means you're not communicating the unique perspective that you have to her, and she's not communicating the unique perspective that she has to you. How extremely you want to take that fight, whether you want to grab her by the shirt and throw her against the wall in the dresser or not, is up to you. You can have a more reserved machloket, or you can have a more excited machloket, but there should be a machloket, because that's what brings life. That's what brings growth. That's what brings meaning. Growth comes through struggle. Growth comes through pain. It doesn't always be negative pain. It doesn't be like pain that literally hurts in that way, but growth comes through struggle. And that's a good thing. And that's how a healthy chavruta should interact. In a marriage, there should be differences of opinion. If either the husband or the wife in a marriage always concedes, they will only always concede until a certain point. And either then, after years, everything blows up, lo aleinu, or the person walks away, lo aleinu. But that's not a marriage. They're meant to have opposing views. Where they share that and how they show, like, so there I would say it may not be the best thing for them to start arguing with each other about where to send you to school in front of you. It's okay for that machloket to happen quietly behind closed doors in their bedroom at a different time, right? But they should be arguing. They should have a difference of opinion. And Shoshana and I we disagree about things all the time. When you go from disagreeing and trying to figure out the MS for you and your family and your spouse and your life to actually having a fight, especially in front of one's kids, those are two separate things. But that's the difference between machloket l'shem shamayim. It's totally l'shem shamayim to have machloket about where you want to send your kid to school. You're invested in your child's education. You care about it. You care about their future. You care about the future of Jewish people. To me, that is a machloket l'shem shamayim. But if you're saying, no, I want to send our child to a school that reflects my values, and I don't care what your values are, that's not a machloket l'shem shamayim, that's a machloket l'shmi. In my hopes that my child will be a continuation of my own selfish, limited perspective of the world. And to really know where each one is coming from. That's part of the challenge of marriage. But it's the same concept. L'shem shamayim sofa l'kayim, eino l'shem shamayim in sofa l'kayim. There's no way. Moving forward, because we haven't even gotten to new stuff yet. So that's a machloket she'eino l'shem shamayim. Machloket she'eino l'shem shamayim is when it's coming from that selfish place, from a place of me, where I'm trying to just, it's all coming from my own ego, from myself, from my need to accomplish something. That's a machloket she'eino l'shem shamayim. It will never stand. It will never stand. Because the goal isn't truth. Because the goal isn't emes. Because the goal isn't a reflection of God's oneness in this world. My whole goal is for me and me alone. It will never stand. It will never stand. And thus we get back to Korach. Korach, as the Mishnah itself identified in Pirkei Avot, what's a machloket that's not l'shem shemayim? Source number 3 from last time. Zo machloket korach v'chol adato. They are definitionally a machloket she'ina l'shem shemayim. If you want to know what a machloket she'ina l'shem shemayim looks like, that's the machloket to look at. That's the machloket to examine. If you want to understand what's a machloket that's not l'shem shemayim. And bringing out one aspect of it, and there's so many gemaras and so many chazals and so many midrashim. One aspect is Rashi brings down in source number 12 on the other side of your sheet. Umara Korach lachalok im Moshe. What did Korach see to have a machloket with Moshe? Very simply, nitkana al nesiuto shel Elitzafan ben Uziel sheminahu Moshe nasiel bnei kahat al pi adibur. Moshe Rabbeinu is a whole complicated kind of genealogy here of how this came about in terms of how he assumed that he should have gotten it, but Korach saw that Moshe gave Elitzafan ben Uziel to be the head of Bnei Kahat, and he deserved to be the head of Bnei Kahat. It should have been me, said Korach. If that's the source of the machloket, if that's really at the root, if that's in Korach's heart, who is Korach fighting for? Himself. Definitionally, a machloket she'ina l'shem shemayim. He's fighting for himself. He's fighting to put himself on a pedestal. And even look at how he goes and then creates that machloket, which is coming from this broken place. Meaning deep down, the machloket was, deep down, was I want to be on top. But how does he go about making that machloket? Skipping down to the bottom underline in Rashi, in source number 12. Ela korei ha'ida. And there are a couple of Gemaras here which I'm sure you're familiar with, but this is the one that Rashi brings down in this context. That he put all of them in talitot, right? A big talis, big tzitzis, right? Korach. So all 250 people suddenly gathered around Moshe in these huge talises. What talises? Shekulam tchilet. There were these bright blue talises. What did he say? Ba'uv amdu lifnei Moshe. They came and stood before Moshe. Defiantly. Amru lo, they said to him, Talit shekula shel tchelet, chayevet betzitzito petura. I have a question for you, Moshe. I have a question for you, Moshe, all-knowing Moshe. Moshe who's giving the law. Moshe who seems to be deciding everything. Fine, Moshe, I've got a question for you. If I have tzitzit that are all tchelet, parentheses, and we know that only one string, B'zrat Hashem, in the future, it has tchelet on it. What if the whole thing is tchelet? Does it need tzitzit? The whole beged's tchelet. The whole talis is tchelet. What do I need the one reminder of one little string for? My whole beged is tchelet. If the purpose of that one blue string is to remind me of the water and then the sky and then the kisei hakavod and the kadosh baruch, my whole beged is tchelet. So Moshe says, Amar lahem chayevet. It doesn't matter, the halacha is, for whatever reason, one has to understand that even if you have a beged, even if the whole garment is tchelet, you still need that thread of tchelet. Hitchilu lischok alav. They began to laugh at him. Efshar talit shel minecha acher, chut echad shel chilat potra. You're going to tell me that if you have a talis that's made out of something else, one strand of tchelet, one string of tchelet is going to make do? But this one, zoshekula tchelet lo tiftor et atzma, this one where the whole beged itself, the very, it itself is tchelet, that's not going to be enough to let it be good, and it still has to have that string of tchelet? Listen to the machloket. How does he come to Moshe? Does he come and schedule an appointment and go online and shoot him an email and say, hey Moshe, I have a halachic shaila for you. Can we sit down and talk? Even text him. Not a big fan of text shailas. Fine. Not a fan of Korach. Let him give him a text shaila. Text him. Say, I have a question for you, Rabbi. No, what does he do? Think about it. What does he do? He gathers an army of 250 people and stands outside the tent. Where is this machloket going? Is this a pursuit of truth? Certainly not. And asks him defiantly, I have this question for you, O great Moshe. What if the obey gets tchelet? And he says, it's chayev tzitzit. Tchayev and tchelet. What does it say? Even look how Rashi responds. What is the immediate response of Korach?
To laugh
at him. To mock him. To berate him. To belittle him. There's no pursuit of truth there. It's a machloket that's from a selfish place, so much so that he's just trying to challenge Moshe, to break Moshe. It's a machloket that's a milchama. This is not a machloket l'shem shamayim. There's no shemet. There's no little teensy bit of l'shem shamayim in this machloket. It's purely to be defiant. That's why when Korach comes, Kikola ida kulam kedoshim uvetocham Hashem, the whole people are holy. Who are you to raise yourself up? Bogus. He doesn't care if the whole people's holy. What does he really want? And Rashi brings it out at the beginning. Not that nobody should be on top. I should be on top. So I'm going to couch it in this seemingly beautiful argument that will show that we're all equal. So I'm equalizing myself with the people and garnering support and politicking and all these things. But really, I just want to be on top. Pure machloket she'ino l'shem shamayim. And we see coming out from even the way in which he presents this machloket that he embodies the negative traits which the Mishnah and Pirkei Avot identify remove a person from this world. Source number 11 on the previous side. Perek Dalet Mishnah Chafal from Pirkei Avot. Rabbi Eliezer HaKafar Omer. Hakina Vata'ava v'hakavod, motzi'ina ta'adam min ha'olam. There are three things that literally remove a person from this world. And they are, what's kin'ah?
Jealousy.
Korach certainly was jealous. Who was he jealous of?
Moshe
Rabbeinu. Why does he get to be up there? Why does Aaron get to be up there? Why does Elisaphon get to be up there? I should be up there. Kina'ah. Elements of Ta'ava there as well that we're not going to get into. And Kavod. What's Kavod? Honor. It should be me. Everybody should be looking to me. I should be the leader of this group. Mutzi'ina ta'adam min ha'olam. They take a person out of this world. And that's what happens. That's what happens to Korach. That's what happens to Korach. What's Korach's punishment?
Swallowed up by the earth.
Motzi'ina ta'adam min ha'olam. He no longer has a place. He no longer has a place. That's the punishment. Midah keneged midah. Motzi'ina ta'adam min ha'olam. He's gone from this world. He has no place in this world. But it goes deeper than that. It goes much deeper than that. And we've spoken about this before. We've spoken about this, that this machloket that they're having is a machloket that belongs in Sefer Bamidbar. It's not just a machloket. It's a machloket that is intrinsically connected to the very fabric of Sefer Bamidbar. What is Korach challenging? What's Korach challenging? Really? Say again? Bring it down a little bit more specifically. What? Excellent. You already took it all the way down the road. So you said individuality. But that's what he is coming to challenge, meaning he's saying, I have a certain station in life, and Moshe has a certain station in life. And what Bamidbar is about is all about each person having their own unique role. That was what we talked about all in Parshat Bamidbar, all in Parshat Naso. That everyone has Parshat Pikudim, that each one has their own tafkid, that every single person has their own role. Every single person has their own role. And Moshe has a role to play, and God designs it that way, and Bahashkachato, Moshe has his role, and Aaron has his role, and Safan has his role, and Korach has his role. Everybody has their role. And since every single person individually has a role, we talked about this in those earlier shirim as well, source number 13, also from Pirkei Avot, Ein lecha davar she'ein lo makom. That every single thing has a place. That if a thing has a unique identity, if a thing has a unique essence, if a thing has a unique goal, then by definition, a thing cannot exist without its own space beneath its feet. If it's unique and has a tafkid, it also must have a makom. Ein lecha davar she'ein lo makom. There is nothing in this world that does not have a makom. And it's not just that it has a makom. Mary points out that makom is also milashon kiyum. That the space in which I stand, the space that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives me, that's what gives me my life. That's what gives me my reality. That's what allows me to be sustained. My makom, my space, is my kiyum, is what gives me existence. It's one of the explanations around a very deep concept. It's brought out here in one place in Bereishit Rabbah, source number 14. Amar ipnei ma mechanin shmo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'korin oto makom. Why do we call HaKadosh Baruch Hu Hamakom? It's one of the names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Hamakom. Says the Midrash here, Shehu mikomo shel olam ve'ein olamo mikomo. Because he is the makom of the world. Meaning, the world exists within him. Everything exists within the context of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He wills everything into existence. Everything exists within him. He doesn't exist within the world. He doesn't require a place. He creates everything with a goal and with its makom. And by creating it with a tafkid and a makom, it's through that person existing in that tafkid and in that makom that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives that person kiyum, and therefore making God mikomo shel olam, making God hamakom. And Korach challenges the concept of makom on two levels. On the first level, in the pshat of the pasuk, he says, "Kol ha'ida kulam kedoshim uvetocham Hashem." The whole nation is kedoshim. What is he denying there when he says that we're all equal? What is he denying?
That they're all individuals.
He's denying individuality. He's saying nobody has a unique makom. And what's really his argument, deep down? The facade of his argument is nobody has a makom. But what's the inside of his argument is, I want his makom. I denied the makom that I was given by God, that gives me my kiyum, and I want his. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, midah keneged midah, in such a more rich way. Midah keneged midah. Whether you want to defy the fact that everyone has a makom, or whether you deny your own makom and leave it behind, you've denied your own reality of makom, and therefore, says the Kadosh Baruch Hu, what midah keneged midah am I going to do to you? Take away your makom. And so midah keneged midah, the earth opens up and there is no longer anything beneath his feet. There's no place for him to stand, there's no makom for him, he has no kiyum, and he falls into the abyss. Very powerful way to understand that that's what's happening with Korach, and that's what Machloket does. That's what Machloket does. And how perhaps this is an extension even of what we talked about in last Parsha, in Parshat Shlach, how these are two sides of the same coin. On the one side, we're seeing the argument of man and God and the breakdown of communication, the breakdown of relationship between man and God. And in this Parsha, we're now seeing the breakdown of relationship between man and man. And those are two sides of one coin. It's unclear exactly even where Parshat Korach takes place chronologically. But that these are two sides of the same coin. But also we see kind of the brokenness of perspective that we talked about. How broken the perspective of Kol Yisrael were in Parshat Shlach in terms of how they viewed HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But there didn't seem to be an invested interest. They thought that HaKadosh Baruch Hu hated them, was out to get them. But there was no, I want to take something instead for myself. There was no selfishness inherently within that, seemingly. Here we see the even darker side of perverse agendas, where it's not just seeing the world wrong, but creating a worldview that's so selfishly inclined that it creates a poisonous atmosphere that removes your entire ability to exist. And I was just, maybe that's why Korach comes after Shlach, that despite the fact that Shlach destroys Jewish history, Korach comes from such a deeper, darker place, even of Bisnat Hashem Otanu, which is terrible, and creates Chorban. Here, this worldview of everything is about me, then there's no hope. Then there's no transition of generations, and the earth simply falls, opens up, beneath your feet, and you're gone. Or one could say even further that while that was the seeds of Chorban, which Chorban lasts longer, Chorban by Rishon or Chorban by Sheni? Sheni. And what's the roots of Chorban by Sheni? Sinat Chinam. And so again, perhaps that being the two sides of the two coins of these parshiot as well, those things need to be developed more, but there are thoughts that I certainly had when going through this and also trying to understand the chronology of Parshat Korach. And that's Vayikach Korach. It's not specific. Because what's Korach's goal? It's that first word. What's that first word? Vayikach. Korach wants to take for himself. It doesn't even matter what it is. It's all about taking for himself. And not just by Korach, by all of them. Their whole goal was to take more and more and more for me. And that's why the Mishnah says that Machloket Shinah L'Shem Shemayim is Korach Ve'adato, because they were fighting amongst themselves. They weren't fighting against Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe was irrelevant to the conversation. These were 250 people who came together and were all fighting for one thing. They were all fighting for what word? Me. Who is me? Depending on who was saying it. They were all unified in their cause of fighting for me, but me was 250 different answers. They were all having a machloket with each other. That's why Moshe gets left out there, and he was L'Shem Shemayim. But who was L'Shem Shemayim? They were all having a machloket with each other because they all really, at the end of the day, wanted to be on top. That was their goal. It's amazing. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, it's either on, I believe, Kuftet or Kufyud, talks about these sugyot, about Korach. And it says that when the earth opened up, that they all fell into Gehinnom. So first of all, I said last time that we'd bring it back. It's interesting that they said that there was two opinions in the Midrash as to what was created on day two of creation, on the day of Machloket. One of them was Gehenna, and the other one was the concept of Machloket. But I would say the two go hand in hand, because where do we see Machloket pop up in Chumash? It's here. When there's a Machloket, they fall to Gehinnom. What's fascinating is the other answer of the Gemara, which I noticed also, which struck me when I was preparing for this material over the summer during the Parshat Shavua, is that the other answer is, no, they didn't go to Gehenna. They simply were lost, and we haven't found them. But that's also really beautiful in our context, because when do you lose something? When can't you find something? When it's not in its place, in its makom. And so I think it's even more beautiful, the fact that it's not that they went to Gehenna, but they're lost because they're not where they're supposed to be. Because they denied their makom, and by definition, they're then lost. But in any event, what's the tikkun here? That's the machloket shenil shem shemayim, that's what Korach was going after. That gives us a lot to think about in terms of making sure that our machlokets, our chavrutot, our interpersonal relationships, that we try to purify ourselves, that we make sure that they're l'shem shemayim. But where's the tikkun in this story? We need a tikkun in this story. Yeah, Rebecca.
I'm just thinking about roles in general. I know here, we know that this was not his role, but in general, in people's lives, you don't really know your role necessarily. You know what you're fighting for is maybe bad or not for yourself, rather than L'shem Shemayim.
We have to work hard to try to figure that out. To figure out what is our tafkid, and what is our role, and what is our goal, and in what way to make it l'shem shemayim. It's something which HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects us to figure out.
But here, Korach knew exactly what his role was.
Right? Yeah, and he denied it, because of kinah and kavod, and therefore, motzino tomin ha'olam ve'in lo makom. So what's the tikkun? So the Gemara there says as well, that not everyone fell all the way into the pit. Who didn't fall all the way into the pit? The sons of Korach. They fell, but not all the way. Because as they were falling, what did they do? They did tshuva. Very interesting concept in this Gemara. The Bnei Korach did tshuva on the way down, and they didn't go all the way to Gehinnom. And these Bnei Korach have a deep impact on history. One of the places where the Bnei Korach come up, who clearly understood in that moment the mistake of their father, and as his children were trying to do tshuva for that, that they come up in some interesting different places. One of them is, they come up in Sefer Tehillim. They're one of the people who get to have a mizmor attributed to them. Source number 15, see if you recognize this mizmor, and if you can tell me where it's from. Source number 15. Shir mizmor livnei Korach. Gadol Hashem umhulal me'od, bi'ir Elokeinu har kadsho, yifen of mesos kol ha'aretz, har tzion yir ketetz zafon kirat melech rav. It ring true in anybody's ears? Anybody remember where it's from? Shir shel yom for? For Monday. Interesting, right? Shir shel yom for Monday. What's the meaning of Shir shel yom for Monday? The answer is nothing, because Monday doesn't exist. It's not a real thing. As Jews, we look at it as the way that the Shir shel yom introduces itself. Hayom yom rishon b'shabbat. Hayom yom sheni b'shabbat. So dafka on hayom yom sheni b'shabbat, the day of machloket, we say a shir shel yom that is from the children of Korach, who are somehow trying to clearly be metaking the issue of machloket, therefore making it the shir shel yom of yom sheni. Chazal tell us, and Rashi quotes it at the beginning of the parsha, that there were few very lofty individuals that came forth from Korach, clearly through his sons. One of the people who came forth through Korach was, he has a whole sefer of Tanakh attributed to his name. Anybody familiar with this, Rashi? Or Chazal? Shmuel. That Shmuel is a descendant of Korach. What was Shmuel's primary function aside from being a Navi? What did Shmuel do in his lifetime? What was his unique tafkid that he did in his lifetime?
He was gave him up.
Past, not that he did, his choice, his actual tafkid, not Chana's tafkid. What did he do? Think about the stories in Shmuel Aleph. He anointed kings. Shmuel anointed Shaul and anointed David. He created a reality of Malchut in Klal Yisrael. And what is a melech about? A melech is all about harmonizing. A melech is all about a true king, a real king, is all about seeing the people for who they are, recognizing the unique individuality and the unique tafkid of every single person in the kingdom, and utilizing all of those unique strengths and harmonizing them into one beautiful whole. That's the goal of a king. A king is a reflection of God who is attempting to harmonize his people. To take God, who is a God who is one, and to unify his people and make them an Am Echad, to make them a people of oneness by bringing all of those unique attributes and aspects together and harmonizing as one. In this day and age, and I'm not even relating to things that happened this week, this would have given the same shiur in any day of the week, any day of the year. But in our day and age, when we think about what a leader is, when we think about what a king is, when we think about what a president is, what a leader is, when we think about when we're choosing that person, or whether that person is appointed, whatever country a person lives in, do we like that person or not? Our question is, when that person says, I believe in this, and I believe in that, and I will do this, and I will do that, we ask ourselves, do I believe in what they want? And when we think of the greatest leaders that were, we think, did they really have great ideals, and did they have great aspirations? That is antithetical to Judaism's view of what a king is. It's antithetical to what a Jewish view of what a leader is. A leader is a melech. They have to exemplify malchut, kingship. The way that the deeper sources define the attribute of malchut is delait le megarme klum. It has nothing of itself. What made David HaMelech, David HaMelech? What made Shlomo HaMelech, Shlomo HaMelech? What made these people who they were is that David HaMelech carved out all of his sense of ego, all of his selfish desires. There was no ego left in him. And he was purely a reflection of godliness in this world, working to unify God's people and create, which is all that he wanted, create a makom of Shekhinah in this world so we could live with Shalom Bayit, with Klal Yisrael and the Beit HaMikdash, with that Shalom, with that Shlemut. And it doesn't come through him, it comes through his son, who shockingly his name is Shlomo, HaMelech Shalom Shalom, whose whole essence is Shalom. Is harmonizing, is unity, is oneness. And that was the peak of Jewish history, was in the times of Shlomo. That's what a king is all about. A king is everything that Korach was not. What's the tikkun? The tikkun is that through the B'nai Korach who do tshuva and recognize the mistakes of Machloket, they eventually produce Shmuel, who is he who creates the reality of kingship in Klal Yisrael. Who anoints the kings of Klal Yisrael. That's where the tikkun comes out. Where they fight for who is going to recognize individuality and unify them. Fight so much so that even when the first choice doesn't work, and Shaul is unable to let his own ego go in certain ways, there are problematic moments in Shaul's malchut that lead to David, but then eventually anoint David, who is truly the ultimate malchut, bereft of any sense of ego, and goal is to harmonize the Jewish people and bring them to a place of shalom. There's a lot more to talk about in Parshat Korach, but the semester is quickly running away from us. I'm sure you feel that way in your classes as well. So we're going to end our conversation of Korach here. And next time we're going to jump forward already to the very, very exciting Parsha of, what's next? Chukat. No, am I wrong? Chukat, okay. Chukat. The parshiot like Shlach and Korach, so we had shorter Shiriman. They're parshiot where there's a lot of Torah to be found on them. I like with this group to spend time really kind of sinking our teeth into the parshiot that don't get as much attention and don't have as much understanding. We're going to spend a few Shirim on Parshat Chukat to unearth some of the really, really deep things lying there beneath the surface that often don't get explored. And I'm very excited to jump into that with you. Until then, we should take these lessons of Korach with us, make sure our machlokot are l'shem shemayim, that they are for the goal of synthesizing and bringing forth new life, for the goal of creating harmony and shlemut, and for the goal of having two sides that do find shalom, that do find unity, and bring out the unity and oneness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world, Bezrat Hashem.